We are going to talk about political media coverage this hour. What you like and don't like, especially with how the 2016 presidential race is being covered. What you think is fair or not. Who's doing a good job. Where do you get most of your political news? A new Pew Research study shows that most Americans now rely on social media for their news. Is that you too? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 9 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, June 3rd. What is your take on media coverage of politics in general and the 2016 presidential race in particular? And what do you make of Donald Trump's attack this week, calling media outlets extremely dishonest and sleazy? We welcome our guest. Michael Wagner is an associate professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communication. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks a lot for being with us. Now, topping the headlines this week, Donald Trump scathing criticism of the media as sleazy, extremely dishonest. This was in response to media questions about his assertions that he had donated a lot of money to veterans groups, and the media wanted to know where did that money go. What's your reaction to Donald Trump calling the media, sleazy for doing that?
Well, it's a classic strategy used by politicians who know that they've been caught in something. And so if you've done something you shouldn't have done or have been caught saying something that isn't quite the truth, one tried and true strategy is to blame the media for pointing that out in the first place and calling them biased. But biased is what people usually say. Sleazy and losers is what Donald Trump says. So at this news conference, you had reporters saying you had skipped a presidential debate and led this live television event where you were raising a lot of money for veterans. Did they get the money? And when the Washington Post first started asking the question, that very day, Donald Trump started cutting checks to some of these organizations. And so he had not been giving them the money he had promised, or at least in some cases hadn't. In other cases, it looks like some resources had gotten to some veterans groups. But the reporters were pointing out that he had not done what he said he was going to do, and he still hasn't done it at the level, at the dollar amount he said he was going to do. And Trump reacted strongly to that, but it doesn't look like he has a leg to stand on insofar as we care about the truth.
So I'm going to ask the question that was asked in an NPR news story headline. Why did Donald Trump hold a news conference to attack the news?
Well, I think one reason is that Donald Trump is very good at changing the conversation when he looks like he might be in trouble. So Trump loses a primary, and the next morning before there's a lot of stories that start to give momentum to Ted Cruz, Chris Christie comes out and endorses Donald Trump. Or Trump is facing heat for this veterans issue, Trump turns his attention to the news media. Or just yesterday, I think it was, Donald Trump was talking about how a court case involving him shouldn't involve a judge because of the judge's Mexican-American heritage and because Donald Trump wants to build a wall between the United States and Mexico. Trump isn't saying that because he thinks he's going to get great coverage about that issue. He's probably saying it because he knows that the coverage will turn to that and not the dishonest way that he presented what he was doing for veterans.
Yeah. Well, according to the New York Times, Donald Trump has garnered more than $2 billion worth of free media, also called earned media. Why does Trump continue to claim so much media attention?
Well, people are watching, people are reading, people are clicking, people are listening, and so that's a big part of it. And part of it is, whenever he's on the air of a television station or radio station, or whenever he does an interview with a newspaper or holds a news conference, he says something that is newsworthy, whether it's really outlandish or stretches the truth or is a strong attack on an opponent or is an announcement of some new thing he wants to do on the policy scale. Every time he appears somewhere, he says something that gets coverage somewhere else. And so one reason the news media give him coverage is because of that. The other is his extreme availability. Hillary Clinton hasn't faced reporters in a news conference, for a long time, on this campaign, where Donald Trump does that sort of thing regularly. He even would do that during his election night victory speeches. And so he's very available, he's very colorful, and he's very good at keeping the attention on himself. And he doesn't want to spend, or at least so far hasn't wanted to spend, very much of his own money running. And if he's going to keep that strategy, he has to get free media attention, which means that he has to find ways to present himself that are really newsworthy, even if they might not be so related to the job of being president.
So he's not the first politician to attack the media. We're a pretty easy target, aren't we?
Yeah, it is a tried and true strategy. A Princeton professor, Jonathan Ladd, has a book called Why Americans Hate the Media and How It Matters. And one of the main explanations for the declining lack of trust in the news media more generally is politicians' willingness to attack it. Now, politicians will say this is because the news media are biased against us, and conservative politicians tend to overwhelmingly think that the mainstream news media are liberally biased, and some more liberal politicians believe the mainstream news media are biased in a corporate fashion that advantage conservative interests. And so, you know, people on both sides of the aisle attack the news media and have been doing so for decades, if not longer. And it's one way to deflect attention from your own problems. It's a way to give your supporters a scapegoat. So if, you know, you're at the water cooler and someone says, well, gosh, how can you support Trump? One response a Trump supporter can give is, well, you heard him. It's the media. They're so biased and sleazy and they're losers and they're attacking him. And it gives people a reason to continue to support their favorite candidate.
Yeah. Do you think attacks or outbursts like Trump had yesterday make media outlets hesitant to ask critical questions?
Sometimes it can. You know, the members of the mainstream news media have to be very careful about charges of bias because that can lead to declining trust. And if people don't trust a source, that's not going to be a source people seek out when they're trying to learn about what's going on in politics and public affairs. And so sometimes reporters can get gun-shy of charges of bias and will include another side to the story, even if that story is less hemmed to the truth than one side of the story. But on the other hand, reporters in the last few months have been increasingly willing to be harder on Donald Trump. The news conference where he was asked lots of tough questions about his claims about giving to veterans is one example. Recently on CNN, you know, on the bottom of the screen where you, above the ticker where they will broadcast what's called a chyron, where they'll show you this is what's happening, right? So they might say, you know, Trump giving speech says he'll build a wall or something like that. Well, recently CNN ran one that says Trump said he never said something about a nuclear arsenal, and then in parentheses they wrote, he did. And so they're actually saying, well, here's what Trump said, but here's the truth. He actually did say these things. And so the news media are getting more aggressive, but sometimes they do so at their own peril because it can result in people trusting them less if they believe the attacks that politicians aim toward the news media.
Yeah. And then, you know, on the other side, there's critics of the media saying don't give Trump any more coverage whatsoever. Somebody on our Facebook page said, you know, just quit covering him. The media can't quit covering the Republican presidential hopeful, can it?
Right, yeah. This is one of two people who have a real chance, a major chance of becoming, you know, what we tend to call the leader of the free world. And so he has to get news media attention. Now, did he have to get 6 times the attention of Ted Cruz and 15 times the attention of Jeb Bush back in January? No, it could have been a much more equal job done by the news media as serving kind of their gatekeeping function of providing information to the public at that time. And I would say that the news media, by and large, performed poorly in the early primaries, giving Trump most of the attention when there were 16 other people like Governor Walker and Governor Bush and Senator Rubio and others who were serious contenders for that position. But now they have to give him a lot of attention because he's one of two people who are the most likely to be president of the United States.
Yeah. And even if that coverage that was one-sided or more coverage was going toward Trump than the other candidates, don't you think, Mike, that a lot of that coverage was critical of the statements he was making and people saying, oh, my gosh, he's talking about, you know, stopping all Muslims from coming into the country. Oh, my gosh, he's talking about making Mexico build this wall. Wasn't it critical coverage, even though there was more of it?
I don't know that it was very critical. I think that it would say, here is something Donald Trump said that, you know, some people might say is outlandish. And then the next section of the story, the longest section of the story, would be Donald Trump defending himself. And, you know, part of the reason that this happened was that early in the campaign, Republican contenders for the White House were not willing, by and large, to be critical of Donald Trump. And when they tried to, say, in a debate, when Governor Walker went after him, for example, earlier on, and when Marco Rubio went after him on the debate stage and on the campaign trail later, Trump hit back 10 and 20 times harder, which seemed to send a signal to other candidates that if we attack Trump, we're really going to get attacked. And since Trump is getting so much attention, the first thing people learn about us are going to be Donald Trump's attacks, because we're not getting covered by the news media. And so one reason I think the media weren't as critical as they might have been was that there weren't sources being critical for them.
Yeah.
Right? If a source is not going to be critical, the news media is in a tough position. If no one's saying something negative, it's hard to, report about it.
We're going to do news, and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about media and politics and how the media are covering the 2016 presidential race in particular, getting some reaction and analysis to Donald Trump's latest attack against the media, calling the political media biased and extremely dishonest and sleazy. Welcoming your reaction to that. And we'll also talk about a new Pew Research Center study, that shows that most Americans now, a majority of us, are getting our news on social media. Is that the case for you? What sources, what news sources do you trust or do you turn to? Where do you get most of your news and why? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We also welcome your assessment, your grade for the media in general, covering politics and covering the presidential race in particular. I wanted to talk a little bit. We'll talk more about the coverage of the presidential race. But Michael Wagner, associate professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communication, wanted to get your thoughts on this new Pew study showing that most of us are getting our news from social media. Does that surprise you?
Well, you know, the study says about 2/3 of us or so get at least some information from social media, with Reddit, Facebook, and Twitter being kind of the major culprits of that. Only about 20% of us, not even almost 20%, say we get most of our news from social media. And so, you know, most listeners, I think, are familiar, at least who use Facebook or Twitter, with just seeing links to a story that might be of interest to them come up in their own feeds. You know, you won't believe what Donald Trump said about this, or, you know, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders are clashing over that, or Governor Walker's latest plan is this. You know, we see lots of that kind of, information in our Facebook and Twitter feeds, and it's a way for some people to keep informed. What's really kind of peculiar, and this is something that a graduate of our program at UW-Madison has found, is that for that 20%, for the people who get most of their news from social media, they start to think that can stand in for a regular diet of news coverage that they might have consumed before. And so they kind of believe, news is going to find me, and so I don't need to make any effort to listen to Wisconsin Public Radio or read the State Journal or Capital Times or Isthmus. If it's important, it'll show up on Facebook. And that means that people end up overestimating what they know and end up becoming less informed about politics because they believe that their use of Twitter and Facebook and Reddit will just magically inform them. But of course, all of that data is highly skewed to what the people who they're friends with or followers of decide to share. And that's a lot different than reporters and editors exercising news judgment to say, here are the things you need to know to be a citizen in our democracy.
Yeah, and I apologize if I misspoke. So the study shows that a majority of us are now getting some of our news
from social media. That's right. Yeah. Upwards of at least 2/3 of us, and that probably underestimates it in some way.
Yeah. What is your take on the story? This is a few weeks old now, but the allegation that Facebook was somehow not sharing conservative news or conservative posts as much as liberal posts.
Well, you know, that certainly would be something that would confirm conservatives' views about the news media and social networking sites like Facebook more generally, which is that they're biased against a conservative perspective. The evidence, I think, on that has not been incontrovertible, and Facebook has pushed back and met with conservative leaders to show them, here's how we decide what goes into people's news feeds, here are the algorithms. Well, they don't know if they've given the algorithms precisely what they do, but they showed them, you know, we're not making any systematic effort to bias what shows up in people's Facebook feeds. And so I don't know that we've heard the last of this, but I don't know that we know for sure that it was happening.
Yeah. Do you think that social media will eventually replace traditional or mainstream news outlets?
I think replace is a strong word. And so, you know, as a professor in the journalism school, and I talk to the historians in our department, they, you know, tell amusing stories of, well, I remember when radio was going to replace the newspaper, and yet
right.
we still have the newspaper, and when television was going to replace radio, and cable was going to replace, you know, over-the-air television, and the internet was going to replace cable, and Facebook was going to replace searching out the internet for things. And so, you know, it seems like what happens is once the new thing comes along, the old things have to find a way to adapt, and they often become less powerful than they were before. You know, network television news does not get the viewers that it got in the 1980s, but it still gets more viewers, you know, than you know, almost any other game in town. And so, you know, traditional media are still powerful, but they are not as powerful as they used to be. And the big change in social media is that we get to talk back. The television set or the radio, you know, short of call-in shows, talk to us, and we were passive receivers of the information. The newspaper was something we read, and unless we wrote a letter, we didn't get to talk back. But if I don't like something you say on your show this morning, I can tweet you right now or say so on your Facebook page right now. And that's very different than things used to be.
Lots of callers. Austin in Madison is with us. Hi, Austin.
Hi. I get much of my news from traditional media, but for social media, I do go on Reddit quite a bit. Previously, Reddit had politics and other subreddits like that, which provided a lot of news media, and I wasn't very satisfied with that content. But there is a subreddit that I frequent now called Our Political Discussion, which disallows memes and jokes and other things like that, and bans comments that do that. And I think it raises the political discussion content quality level and provides a very good source of political news.
Yeah. So why is disallowing jokes and memes good, you think, Austin?
Because those distract from the issues that people should be actually deciding their stances on.
And then some people might also think that it was true. Mike Wagner, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a perceptive call from Austin. So first of all, you know, in the report you were talking about, you know, Reddit is kind of number one in terms of where people who get news on social media say they get it from. And this change to, you know, pushing back on limiting comments or not allowing them in some circumstances or policing destructive commentary is something that can raise the level of political discussion. In the University of Wisconsin's Life Science Communication Department, some scholars there, Dietrich Schleifele and Dominique Broussard and others, I think, have done some work that suggests that comments can really affect the trust that people give to the stories they read in the paper, or, you know, if there are comments allowed, say, on WPR's site. When people comment and say things that aren't true or are really destructive, it can actually affect people's interpretation of the real news content that went through a professional reporter and editor's eyes before getting to the people, rather than, you know, a comment which, you know, in most cases isn't policed very carefully. And so moves like Reddit has done, and some magazines and newspapers have also stopped allowing comments. That is something that can, you know, can have a positive effect. We tend to want to say the internet should be this pure democratic space where all ideas can be shared, but in some circumstances, the sharing of ideas can lead us to believe things that aren't true.
Thank you, Austin. Claire in Plymouth is with us now. Hi, Claire.
Good morning. You know, as someone who used to work on the technology side of a news organization a number of years ago, I just have to look. I mean, I do get a lot of my information in terms of the first glance at it sometimes comes from social media, but I immediately go and check from a reputable source. I mean, I basically don't believe anything that I read from some somebody who said something that if it's not from a reputable source, I don't believe it, and I go and look and check, just like, you know, we're taught to look at a couple different sources to make sure. And the one thing that I think is really amazing is the people who continue to spin all of the things that we know that have been pretty that are pretty damaging, and they believe that first rather than actually checking things out.
Mm-hmm. Mike Wagner?
Yeah, I think that's really important. It's a very good idea to try to confirm information from more than one source, especially if that first place is from social media. And one reason is just that, you know, there are a lot of phony news sites out there or extremely biased news sites out there, and sometimes they're the ones that produce the most clickable headlines. And those are the ones that get shared the most. And I think, you know, probably many of your listeners, and myself included, have been guilty of, you know, seeing a headline that was funny or fit your own political predispositions, and you hit share or like or retweet, only to find out later, oh, that was from a satirical site that, you know, that we hadn't heard of before, mm-hmm. or something that ended up not being true. And I think your caller is quite right that, you know, confirming that first is an excellent strategy before deciding to believe something is true.
Yeah, well, and one of the things I caught myself doing, too, is seeing a headline and maybe wanting to share it, but then looking closer, and it was like a story that was 2 years old. And, you know, people...
Right.
And so it wasn't really news. It was just making the rounds again. What are your thoughts on how... I don't know how the use of social media, at least for some of our news, how this, I don't know, how affects society as a whole.
Well, I think it's given some people license to be meaner than they would be face to face. And so some of the things that people say on social media to others are things that they would probably never say at a barbecue, you know, for example. Right. Jesse Apoyan of the Cap Times had a feature story a couple of weeks ago that discussed how women in politics are treated. And part of it just talked about the kinds of comments people are willing to make to a female person running for office about their appearance on Twitter, or, you know, or that they shouldn't be running for office because they're a woman or something like that. And those are things that people tend not to say when they have to look somebody in the eye, but from, you know, the computer screen, they get a little braver. So I think one thing is that, but I think one thing that social media can do is it can connect us to people and places and things that we never otherwise would have been connected to. You know, reporters from news organizations around the globe have responded to tweets I've made asking them questions about their stories or saying I liked this or didn't like that, and all of a sudden it gives a regular person a voice in a way that they didn't have it before. Plus, it connects us to all different kinds of information that we might not otherwise get. You know, if I want to know what the governor or our senators or someone else are up to today, social media is one way that I can find that out without having to wait for my favorite news program on the radio or television or for the story to get written in the newspaper. I can just see what they say. Now, the downside of that is I only see what they say, and I don't get a professional take on what they've done. I just get their own unfiltered perspective of what that politician wants me to know about.
Thanks to Claire. Now to Rick in Green Lake. Hi, Rick.
Good morning.
Morning.
I wanted to make some comments about the propensity for folks to grossly oversimplify the notion of social media and what it means as a source of information. I think that those of us that have looked at it and studied it and spent time with it would say that you have to be very careful in suggesting that the distinction between the actual source of the news I'm reading, maybe a story written in the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times or somewhere else, and who's curating the mix of stories that I get. So if I go to Twitter and I read only posts on Twitter, then the social media source is curating my news, but the majority of those posts are going to be, hey, I love this story, and it's a New York Times story, it's a Wall Street Journal story, it's a CNN story, it's an NPR story, you name it. So I think that we've got to be really, really careful in the way you ask questions and how you interpret the answers people give. And I think we're really oversimplifying and say, oh, my God, everyone's getting their news on the basis of Joey and Susie's comments on Twitter. That's just not reality.
Well, that's a good point, Rick, that a lot of those news that we're getting off of Facebook is from the New York Times or some other traditional news source, Michael Wagner.
Well, that's exactly right. And I don't think anybody is saying that getting your news from social media means you're getting your news largely from someone who is jobless and wearing sweatpants, living in their parents' basement, typing up whatever they want and, you know, not fact-checking it in any way. I think, you know, what it means is the diet of information we're getting tends to be skewed by ideological, predispositions. And so liberals tend to share stories that make liberals look good and conservatives look bad, and conservatives tend to do, you know, just the opposite. And so it's not necessarily that we're not getting information from credible sources. It's that the diet of information we're getting isn't as full as it might be if we used more well-rounded sources. And of course, people can also greatly influence the social media diet they get, right? So who you follow on Twitter, who you're friends with on Facebook, what you choose to click on, are all ways that you can expand the universe of information you get and expand the scope of perspectives that you are exposed to. And all of that matters. The other thing that's difficult, this is more the case with when social media brings us to political blogs, but it's hard for people to distinguish where they heard something. Professor Devon Shah in our department has done this really neat study with colleagues that shows when a blog intersperses commentary with information from reputable sources, people have a hard time remembering what was the commentary and what was the reputable source, because we're just, you know, saturated with information in our environment. It's hard to remember who taught me that. And social media makes it easier to forget the source of information.
Thank you, Rick, for the call. Let's take a call next from Art in Green Bay. Hello, Art.
Hi, good morning. I listen to Joy. You probably recognize my voice, and you know I call in from time to time. I listen to a lot of radio. I listen to public radio in the mornings typically, and I'll listen to conservative talk radio in the afternoon. I have to say NPR and WPR do a really good job with their half-hour news breaks where they give you a news summary. It changes as the day goes on, whereas on network news, I find that a lot of it is the same. It's repeat, repeat, repeat. I've heard the same news all day in some cases, very little change. But one of the things that that I listen to and is how often I hear stories on one source that I don't hear stories on the other source. And if you know, as you know, all the conservative shows are usually on ABC, NBC, or CBS affiliates. They're carried nationwide, and they have half-hour news breaks, too. And the amount of time that I'll hear a conservative host say, here's a story that you won't hear in the mainstream media, and then they tell the story, and then you listen to the break, you know, the news break again and again and again, and you can sometimes go for months before you'll hear it on any of the mainstream media. And some of the things that aren't being covered are the things that I think what that cause people not to trust the media. And like the VA scandal is a good one, where you had the whistleblower saying that he only emailed or only sent requests for people to look into it.
Yeah, I'm going to jump in now, Art, because we don't have enough time to go into great detail over that specific story to fairly discuss it, because we have less than a minute before our news break. But his point being is that conservative talk show hosts will talk about a news story that they say you will not hear in the liberal media, and Art thinks that is the case. Do you have a 30-second response to that, Michael Wagner?
Very quickly, I would say that sometimes that's true, and sometimes it's because of news values that reporters have, where they really have to nail something down and confirm it before they can put it in the paper. And a talk show host is freer to speculate, at least in some circumstances on some shows. And so part of it is news values, and part of it is news organizations not wanting to push a particular ideological agenda.
Michael Wagner is an associate professor at the University of Wisconsin's Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communication. We are talking about media and politics and how the media are covering politics, and we're welcoming your questions and your thoughts on that. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about media coverage of politics and the 2016 presidential race in particular, and we're welcoming your assessment of that. Welcoming your reactions to Donald Trump this week, attacking the media, calling media outlets, especially political media outlets, extremely dishonest and sleazy. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Michael Wagner, an associate professor in the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communication. And before we get to a lot of comments about bias in the media, I wanted to ask you, Michael Wagner, do you see big discrepancies in how, I guess, the mainstream media covers the different candidates? Do you see, you know, I don't know, Hillary Clinton getting a pass while, you know, while the media is going after Bernie or Trump or something?
Well, I would say I see discrepancies in the way coverage is approached for different candidates. And a lot of this has to do with what Kathleen Hall Jamieson at the University of Pennsylvania has kind of called the press effect, which is that sometimes on the presidential stage, at least, reporters tend to make judgments about who politicians are very early and then cover stories that fit that narrative and don't cover stories that don't fit that narrative. And so when Hillary Clinton is being secretive and wanting to be standoffish with the media, that stuff gets a lot of coverage because that is how reporters see her. And when Donald Trump says outlandish things, that gets a lot of attention because that's how reporters see him. When George W. Bush makes a verbal stumble, that gets attention because reporters viewed him as not as sharp as other candidates. When Al Gore stretched the truth, that got more attention because reporters viewed him as dishonest. And so a lot of the coverage tends to follow narratives that get set about candidates early on in campaign seasons. And so I would say there are differences. You know, Bernie Sanders tends to get coverage that almost always begins with, he's behind Hillary Clinton, he's probably not going to be the nominee. Well, that probably fundamentally changes how people approach, you know, learning about Bernie Sanders. You know, when they think, oh, well, he's probably not going to win, versus here's this person's ideas and what it is he wants to do as president. And that kind of issue is, you know, it exists for everybody who's running for office in one way or another.
Yeah. Do you still see, again, the media in general covering the horse racy stuff and the sensational attacks as opposed to economic issues, how to solve economic issues?
Well, you know, I tend not to look at it as either or. I think mm-hmm. both kinds of things are being covered. Horse race stuff does get a lot of attention. Who's winning? It's a lot of attention for a few reasons. You know, one, it's almost always new because there's a new poll. And two, it's hard to call it biased because the news organization is just saying, here's what the polls say, not, here's what we've chosen to cover, which then you can call biased or not. And so one reason it's done is to limit, you know, critiques of bias. Another is that it's almost always new. And another is that people really want it. People like getting that kind of coverage, even if they say they want more issue coverage. The places that give more attention to issues, you know, tend to get fewer clicks. The stories on a news site where one is a poll story about the horse race and one is about a deep dive into the Sanders-Clinton economic differences, you know, the Sanders-Clinton economic difference story gets less clicks. And so part of it is the audience choosing the horse race coverage versus what it is the media might like to provide. Most reporters didn't get into this business to tell you what the polls say.
Let's go to Bernie in Elkhorn now. Hello, Bernie.
Hi, good morning. Professor Robert McChesney, I find, a really excellent source on the media, and I find that there's a complete absence of investigative reporting. For example, on CNN, which I watch for election primary results, you wouldn't have known in New York State that over 100,000 voters were purged off the voter rolls for the Democratic primary in New York City. You wouldn't know about polling places that opened at noon and places in New York. And, you know, you'll hear that, say, on Democracy Now!, but you'll never hear reporting on subject like that that hurts Bernie Sanders on the mainstream media, CNN, for example. And just one last point, investigative reporter Greg Pallas has just reported that in California, that poll workers in Orange County and elsewhere are being instructed to give provisional ballots to independents who are allowed to vote in the Democratic primary there. And provisional ballots, he calls placebo ballots, because they make people happy that they voted, but they never get counted. And since Bernie's got a 40% edge in independents over Hillary, if there's a big turnout of independents and their votes don't get counted, that's the kind of thing CNN should talk about, but I'll bet they don't.
Thoughts on that, Michael Wagner?
Well, you know, I think there are differences in what different news organizations choose to investigate. And, you know, as the economics of news coverage change, one of the first things to go tends to be heavy investment into investigative reporting. Places like the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism locally, you know, do invest resources into conducting investigations. But those things, you know, take a long time. They take a lot of resources, and they tend not to produce a ton of stories. They tend to produce really important stories, but it's an economically difficult thing for the news media to do. And the caller referenced Professor McChesney, who studies a lot of the role that corporate media can play in limiting what gets discussed, what gets covered, what we know about, what we believe we ought to be able to expect from our democracy. And so there certainly is, you know, a lot to be said about the economics of those kinds of situations. I'm not sure that I would quite agree with the idea that what's getting covered is designed to help one candidate over another, but that's certainly something people tend to disagree about.
Yeah, and I'm going to check into too, just because the story about the provisional ballots for independents in California, this also could be party rules in that vary state to state, and whether California has a closed Democratic primary that you have to be, you know, that kind of thing. Do you have any idea, Michael Wagner, if that's the case?
Yeah, I don't quite. I haven't brushed up on California's rules, but it is the case that, you know, the parties control how their primaries operate, and so they decide the rules for those, and they vary greatly by state. And, you know, in some respects, those rules have helped Sanders in states where there are caucuses, and in others, those have helped Clinton in states where the primaries are closed.
Yeah. We just have sort of a variety of different comments on our Facebook page, including I'm looking for this one comment where someone said it's obvious that that Hillary Clinton does not get negative coverage. You know, just sort of a blanket statement, and I'm just trying to figure out where that comes from, because I see negative coverage for Hillary Clinton all over the place. What's your assessment of that, Michael Wagner?
Well, yeah, it's true. Hillary Clinton does get a lot of negative coverage, and it's also, you know, kind of a tried and true effect of humans when they encounter news media, is that they tend to see the news media as hostile to their point of view. Now, this is something that UW professor Al Gunther is kind of the foremost expert on in the world, the hostile media effect. And it's this idea that when we see news coverage, we remember the negative stuff about our side and the positive stuff about the other side, but we don't remember anything negative reported about the other side, and we're less likely to remember positive things reported about our side. And so it's kind of an orientation to think that the media are against us, and it's something that is not ideological. Liberals experience this, conservatives experience this, independents experience this, but it tends to be experienced the most by people who are deeply committed to something in politics, whether it's a political party or an ideology or an issue. When we see stories about that thing, we tend to think it's biased against our perspectives.
David in Hawkeye, Iowa is with us. Hi, David.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. What's your thought?
Well, I am a millennial. I'm 22 years old, and I am very involved in politics this year. This has really spurred me to get involved. And one thing that I have decided, I like to be thorough, so I do go ahead and I have reached out and investigated myself into different news sources, alternative news sources on social media, and then again on the mainstream media, CNN, NPR, and so forth. Now, one thing that has really solidified in my mind after this year is that with the ever-expanding social media society that we have, it seems that a lot of the mainstream news is coming out with stories that are incomplete because they have to compete with many novice journalists and people that are posting to Twitter and Facebook and the Snapchat and whatnot these days. And it seems like the mainstream news is just trying to push things out very swiftly. Like, for example, to bring up the Nevada Democratic convention that was a couple of weeks ago. For an entire week, all that you heard about was these hostile and violent Bernie Sanders supporters throwing chairs and whatnot, yet every news station did not even show any kind of video footage of a chair being thrown. There was one that I had seen on Democracy Now where a Bernie Sanders supporter had picked up a chair, but another Sanders supporter came up to him and talked him down. He put it down, and they hugged it out. But through the whole week, including NPR, CNN, whatnot, they're saying chairs are being thrown and whatnot. And it just seems like the story is incomplete.
Yeah, I get it. And I'm sorry, David, I don't mean to interrupt, but we have less than a minute to go for that. Michael Wagner?
This can happen, right? Especially in the new world of immediacy, where we want things right now. But often, you know, these mistakes are most often made in breaking news situations. And so when something occurs, the initial reports often end up not being precisely correct. And it's, you know, it's often a fluid environment. But something like the idea of the Nevada caucus, the Nevada meeting that the caller was talking about, yeah, the news media seemed to make a real mistake there. They talked freely about chairs being thrown without a whole heck of a lot of evidence that that's what happened. And so sometimes reporters run ahead of information, but usually they're the ones trying to fact check things and trying to push back against the stream that happens in social media.
Yeah. Well, I guess with the final minute that we have, you want to give us, some sort of tip to how we should watch the media during this presidential election?
Well, I think it's really important to think about, in live interview situations, when follow-up questions are not asked. The reporter asks the question, the politician dodges it, the reporter moves on. This happens a lot in television news coverage of political candidates. That's something to watch for. And in terms of information, I would say trying to find that same bit of information from a second source is a great way to be more confident that it's true. But when it's something really striking and new and something you haven't heard anywhere else, if you haven't heard it anywhere else, your first thought, I would say, is skeptical.
Sounds good, and I will work on my follow-up questions, too. Thanks very much for being with us. Michael Wagner, an associate professor in the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communication. Thanks to producers Marika Suval, Naisha Ellison, and Brianne Chasso. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.